Because questions about police use of force are not going away. Good Friday to you. Welcome to the Week in Review. I'm Bill Radke. Today with the Mossback at crosscut.com, Knute Berger from Civic Cocktail on the Seattle Channel, Joni Balter, and Luke Burbank, host of the TBTL podcast and Public Radio's Live Wire. Welcome, everybody.
Good morning.
Hey, Bill.
Good morning.
Get ready. We are live tweeting the show right now at KUOW. And guess what? Our top story is, once again, police use of violence, this time in the Tri-Cities in Pasco, Washington. Police say 35-year-old Antonio Zambrano Montez was acting bizarrely and throwing rocks at cars and officers. And all of us have seen the bystanders' cell phone video, yes?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
22-second video.
Something you really can't unsee. And yes. I would mention to the listeners that if you're easily upset by these sorts of things, really think twice before watching this video because it is the death of a person right there.
Right, right. You see this man throwing something. I think he's throwing a rock at an officer. Police say two officers were hit by rocks and or dirt clods, and they won't say how hurt those officers were. They say they tried tasering the man. Apparently, it didn't get through his clothes. Anyway, he didn't stop. As an NPR reporter described it, you see police fire five shots at the man, toward the man.
Then he walks, then runs across the street. They chase him. When they get within a few feet of him, he turns, ready to hurl something, and they shoot again. This time he falls, fatally wounded.
He turned ready to hurl
actually
something.
Take issue with that characterization.
Yeah, I'm not even sure about that.
Yeah, no, it doesn't mention that he had his hands up at one point. Where,
yes, you know, when he's running away.
And also when he turned around, he had his hands up there. The moment before they open fire, his hands come from being above his shoulders to being about at his waist level. But it still is very hard to see that as an aggressive gesture.
I could see it that he looked like he might have started a throwing motion, but you know, we're talking about now watching the same second over and over.
Yeah, but rocks and shooting somebody, there is a real disconnect here from what we can see in the video.
Right.
You know, this person was throwing rocks. They love to talk about how involved they are in community policing. If you're involved in community policing, you must know something about somebody who stands in your downtown and throws rocks. And you must know that shooting a gun is probably the last resort. The taser didn't work. How about five shots of the taser instead of five shots out of the gun?
Okay, first of all, speaking of community policing, this guy has had brushes with the law before. He had been arrested for assaulting a police officer last year. Police say he had thrown objects at officers and tried to grab an officer's pistol, and he pleaded guilty to that. So the force knew of him.
He was definitely not up for Citizen of the Year in Pasco.
Right.
Had just been released from jail over, I think, non-payment of fines. That being said, how about you just let the guy walk down the street for a few blocks, and then you go catch up with him when he is ideally calmed down to some degree, and then you cuff him or do whatever you need to do. I just didn't see this as, I mean, he's running away from the police. At this point, I can't see how he was some sort of a threat to them.
Okay, I'll be the guy who's making the possible police officer case, which is we're protecting bystanders. He's throwing at who knows where, who. Do we know whether he has a gun? The point is, are we asking police officers over and over again to do the impossible, which is defend themselves, defend all the bystanders against somebody they don't know who he's going to, what he's going to do next?
The trouble with this
we will all critique it afterward.
Yeah, that's for sure. But everyone should assume that. We've talked about that a zillion times, about everyone's videotaping everything, so you will be second-guessed, which is, you know, obviously a huge issue. But all they saw were rocks.
Yeah.
They didn't see a gun. When you see a gun, then there's a different response. But all they saw were rocks.
Yeah. It's hard to defend.
Yeah, well, I mean, if the guy ran down the street and threw a few more rocks, is that really deserving of a death sentence meted out right on the street? If they were that concerned with citizen safety, they shot at this guy across a busy street.
Yeah.
Then ran across that street and shot down another busy street as he was fleeing and had stopped and turned. You know, the whole thing just raises a lot of questions. And I kept imagining, and I've seen stories about this before, if this were a coyote or if this were a black bear that had wandered into a town and the police gunned it down like this, people would be outraged. You would have animal rights activists and other people saying, why didn't you shoot a trank dart, or why didn't you net him?
And they'd say because a bear doesn't throw rocks.
But that's a very good point. Do we not have
bears? A bear poses an even greater threat. There's some kind of real disconnect here in terms of how some people are treated in these situations. And they're going to do an inquest and have, you know, citizens look into the thing, and whether that will, you know, and do an independent investigation. That doesn't happen often, I guess, in Franklin County, but
right.
It's going to.
What about trank darts? Do they have those for humans? I actually don't know that, and I think, could we try that?
Yeah, they're not all like Batman, who have all the possible gear.
Utility belt,
you know.
I can definitely feel pretty confident saying that we would not be having this conversation if a random citizen had not been pointing their cell phone from inside their car at the scene of this event. And I am very curious to see, I don't believe it's out yet, it's certainly not released to the public, what the police report says in terms of what happened.
Right.
Because my guess is, had there not been video, you would sort of hear it whispered on the wind, yeah, police shot a guy in Pasco on the street. He was threatening them. And the report, I have not seen the report, but my guess is it will describe a very dangerous scene where officers had no choice but to shoot this man 13 times. And my larger point here is, body cams are not a panacea at all. But every time we have more information, more objective visual information on these things, we find out that oftentimes police reports are misleading.
Yeah. So in other words, how often is this happening when there's not a bystander
video? Because the police
video?
Who write the reports are the same police who may have, not always, but may have acted improperly.
Right.
But that's the new era. A lot of these events are going to be on video because everybody has a cell phone and they're taking pictures of these things. And, you know, I do wonder what we didn't see. Of course, we should all wonder that.
Yes.
We don't really know what happened before. We only know this 22 seconds.
Yep.
But yet, police have to deal with the fact that everything is being videotaped, or almost everything. And the cameras, the body cams, may be a help, and they may also only show a slice.
And we're not going to get into this now, but we will in the future. The fact that just this week, for example, there was more of these public disclosure requests, which are making some police forces say, well, we're not going to bother taping everything if then we have to get into the morass of editing and releasing, and so that's ongoing. We're going to talk about that. Let's leave you with some actual people from Pasco, a little bit of what the town is saying, and then we move on.
It's upset. We have kids. We want them nice to live in peace, everybody. And I just don't feel comfortable to go to the stores. You know, just not even driving or seeing people. It's so scared. It is.
When something like this happens, that's when I think people automatically think, oh, it's just because of a person's nationality or race or anything like that. But it's not. We're all just human beings, and that's it.
I don't think that was a prejudice thing, that to say that the officers did this out of prejudice or racism. I think that it was more the heat of the moment, if you would say.
Yeah, the backdrop is Michael Brown and Eric Garner, et cetera. But we don't know that race or nationality was a factor here, although there have been incidents before in Pasco and elsewhere, right, where people with limited English skills are picked up wrongly and there's confrontation with the police escalates. So it's like it's background radiation, the question of
race. But I do think that people are making comparisons to Ferguson. Whether that is appropriate or not, we'll find out. But there are peaceful demonstrations down there.
Yep.
The community is upset. They're planned for more demonstrations. People are coming from elsewhere to kind of lend support in this situation. So race is still part of the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the police said right away, we don't want to be another Ferguson. I mean, that comparison was drawn the moment this occurred, basically.
So we'll watch. There'll be demonstrations. There'll be, as we said, looks like there'll be a coroner's inquest jury to decide whether the officers were justified in their use of deadly force. This is KUOW's Week in Review. We're just getting underway with more of the week's top stories to break down and analyze. Don't go away. KUOW's Week in Review. I'm Bill Radke with Knute Berger and Luke Burbank and Joni Balter. So when you say Highway 99 tunnel project worker accident, it sounds bad now. It sounds ominous. Joni Balter, four construction workers fell about 20 feet when a concrete wall gave way. Does this have anything to do with Bertha, with water pressure, with mushy soil, any of that stuff?
So you're getting a little bit at is this sort of poor Bertha, is she cursed? Did this have anything to do with sinking ground and any of that? It seems to me, and I'm going to end up agreeing with the mayor here, Mayor Ed Murray said it's really not about Bertha so much, although it did, of course, happen in the construction of the north end of the tunnel.
The north portal, so up by Seattle Center.
Yeah, up by Seattle Center, but it really is a matter of worker safety. I mean, when you build something like this, stuff happens. We know that. And actually, this project seemed to, they got a break on their insurance because they, their worker safety insurance, because they had had a fairly good record up until now. So I don't think you can blame, the shifting sands beneath the ground.
How about the fact that it took 25 minutes for the firefighters to hike to the location? That doesn't seem
I didn't hear that.
Have you been under there? Because I have. It's pretty hard to
get around.
I'm
not going down there. Have you heard?
I went under there.
Accidents happening every
day. I actually emerged after the tour. No, I mean, it's a little claustrophobic, to be honest, but it is a big old space down there.
Yeah, but I mean, you want to talk about a safety issue. What if somebody had an asthma attack or ate a peanut they weren't supposed to, and you had 25 minutes to get to them? I mean, that sounds dangerous.
Right. You get better response time with the earthquake alert that we're going to talk about later later on the program. Stay tuned. You'll be hearing a lot of but that's for another time.
That's a hell of a promo.
Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to say, whatever you think of Bertha, big projects often have casualties. And the state and the contractors and everybody do everything they can to minimize the work that's going on down there. Is dangerous work. Mm-hmm. You're working in dangerous conditions. But I would point out that at least, I think, three construction workers that were killed during the building of the World's Fair. At least two workers were killed during the construction of the bridge of I-5 over Lake Union. Big projects require people to go into dangerous places and do dangerous things. And so you do everything you can to mitigate it. And unless the investigation shows that there was some sort of error here or lack of safety precautions or something, you have to kind of wait for that. But, injuries on projects like this are not unusual.
Okay. The DOT says our discussion of the Bertha situation is 70% complete, and we'll be back at it. Next story this week, will the rising minimum wage in Seattle drive out manufacturing? This week, the maker of outdoor gear, including Therm-a-Rest sleeping pads, which I own, I didn't know they were local. But this, do you know this company, Cascade Designs? They make stoves and
I read it.
Yeah, water filters and tents and things. This company announced that it's moving 100 jobs to Nevada. And there were several reasons. We will talk about those. But company vice chairman David Burrows said one reason they're moving jobs is the new minimum wage.
I'm not anti-minimum wage. This is a nuanced, complex issue. I've always maintained that there's a real difference between the service businesses, which were the focal point of the debate on minimum wage, and manufacturing businesses like ours that are involved in a global economy. The service businesses that compete with one another within the city limits, those businesses compete with one another very fairly. But the problem for us is, as trade barriers have gone down in the U.S. over the past 20 years, there's a global market for labor to make consumer products like the products that we make.
So he's saying, yeah, higher minimum wage for restaurants, service businesses that all compete against each other in the city. But manufacturers are competing with the whole world. We cannot afford these wages. So are we seeing the downside of a higher wage driving out manufacturers? Seattle City Council member Mike O'Brien says maybe some, but not that many.
For some businesses, that will tip the balance and they'll move elsewhere. And other businesses will come in and backfill. You know, we're seeing a lot of breweries and distilleries. And is that manufacturing or not? I don't know, but it is an industrial type use that's job creating. Maybe we'll see more, food production in the city, where being close to your market is really important. And folks that are competing on the global scale, where it's produced means a little bit less, will find that going to a lower cost environment makes sense.
Okay, food and beer, but maybe some manufacturers just shouldn't be in Seattle anymore.
Well, that's been true for some time. I mean, look at the Kent Valley. I mean, a lot of those businesses used to be on Harbor Island and, you know, other places. Seattle has been seen as unfriendly to manufacturing, both because of changing zoning and sort of gentrification, but also even before that because of competing uses for limited spaces, the tax issues. You know, so part of this is a bigger change that the minimum wage issue might put a little more weight on the should we move part of the scale for some people. The real interesting thing, and this was in Peter Steinbrück's report about the health of our urban villages, one of the statistics in there was that we were falling way short of our projection over the last 20 years of job creation. So basically, if you look at the numbers, the jobs that are being created in Seattle are basically all in South Lake Union and some downtown. They're service jobs or they're, you know, software and that kind of thing. And we're not building the manufacturing base. That,
what difference does it make? Why does that matter?
Well,
yeah, like there are no farms in Wallingford.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, things change.
One of the reasons it matters is taxation. In other words, a lot of tax is derived from these businesses that benefits the city. Vancouver is often cited as an example of a city that drove out its industrial base. It went out to the suburbs. Now the city has all these skinny towers, but its tax base has shrunk. So a lot of people think that's part of the issue. So some of it goes back to sort of, you know, what makes the most sense when you design your city. Do you want to have all those things in there? Or do you want to say, hey, yeah, we'll let those jobs go out to the suburbs, which creates transportation problems. It creates, you know, other costs, and it costs you revenue. That's one side of the, and the other side of the equation is, well, yeah, but if you can build office towers and fill them with rich guys, that has a benefit too.
This is a first for me. I'm going to agree with Councilmember Mike O'Brien, because there is this sort of new jobs coming in, you know, not exactly to Seattle, but Elon Musk coming in. New jobs are coming in and other jobs are coming out. And there was something buried in, I think it was in the tape that KUOW did, where they were talking about the minimum wage. They were also talking about the cost of housing.
Yes. So those are the other reasons that this guy cited. It's not just minimum wage.
Right.
It's traffic. It's land prices. It's, yeah, the cost of living.
But to the degree that it is about the minimum wage, I mean, number one, I don't think we want to be known as the best place to have a job that doesn't let you live basically a normal life, i.e. a job that pays $9, $10, $11 an hour. And this guy sounds actually like he's a pretty thoughtful person and isn't just chalking it up to the minimum wage. But really, when a business says we have to move because we want to pay less than the minimum wage, what they're really saying, in my opinion, is we would like the rest of you to subsidize our employees, who many of whom will be on food stamps, many of whom will be on various forms of public assistance, even when they work for us, because we do not pay them enough money for them to pay for all of the needs that they have for their families. So it's like, if you want to run a business and you want to employ people full time and you want everybody else to pay for the food that they can't afford at the end of the month, we can have that conversation, but I feel like that's part of this.
Yeah, I have the feeling if it were just about the minimum wage, they would probably stay local and move somewhere
else. Go to
the Puget Sound region. But they were looking at Utah. They were looking at Nevada. Those states offer other benefits for manufacturing with cheap land and low taxes.
But another way of saying that is being a Seattle manufacturer is hard enough. Don't jack up my labor costs, too.
But then they were also saying that, you know, one of the benefits of moving not within the state but out of state is that the housing costs were about half, and so you could feel better about still paying the low wages. So.
Right.
We'll see how far $10 an hour goes even in Nevada, right? Because, I mean, the new jobs – again, I'm not trying to demonize this company. They seem like they're a well-intentioned, great local company. I assumed everything I bought at REI was just built by gnomes inside of that climbing rock.
Right,
and
right.
At night, they just ship it out the back. But I guess there's companies making that stuff.
Who knew?
But, I mean, you know, that one of the things they said is that the jobs that are moving to Nevada will start at $10 an hour. I just, you know, I don't know how far you can get. You know, I guess if you're a young single person, you can make it work. But if you start having a family, that seems like a really tall order.
Watching our city change, KUOW's Week in Review, Luke Burbank, Knute Berger, Joni Balter, and the governor of Oregon is the governor. He's not going to be the governor. Just a second. We're going to get right back to that. Stay tuned.
Hi, this is Bill Radke. I'm home now making spaghetti sauce, but when we recorded this podcast at 10 in the morning on Friday, Oregon's governor had not yet resigned, which has since happened. But it was an interesting conversation, so here you go.
KUOW's Week in Review. Welcome back. Top stories this week, and the next one up is what is happening one state over. Oregon's governor is not resigning. Forget what you've heard. Governor John Kitzhaber keeps saying he's still governor and he's going to be governor. Salem correspondent Chris Lehman, welcome to the Week in Review.
Thanks. Great to be here.
So this week, Oregon's Secretary of State, second in line to be governor, was at a meeting in D.C., suddenly left her meeting, flew back to Salem, and no one agrees on why?
Right. It was really an extraordinary series of events. The Secretary of State, who is president of the organization who was holding the conference, quickly hopped on a plane, flew back here, had a meeting with the governor, and the governor said, "Why are you here?" And she was like, "Well, you asked me." And she issued a statement later calling it a bizarre situation.
Is he disagreeing? Are they disputing one another?
Well, so far, the governor hasn't publicly commented on the Secretary of State's quick journey back to Oregon. His only public statement this week is a very short statement on Wednesday afternoon saying that, as you implied or alluded to in the lead-in, that he's still governor, he's not resigning.
So the backstory here is that Kitzhaber is under a criminal investigation involving him and his fiancée. Will you recap that?
Sure. The criminal investigation has been launched by the Oregon Department of Justice. And basically, the governor and his fiancée, First Lady Sylvia Hayes, are there's allegations that they essentially sold influence, that Sylvia Hayes received contracts from groups who wanted to influence public policy in Oregon. The governor looked the other way or in some cases actively helped that to happen. Again, those are the allegations at this moment, basically influence peddling on a pretty big scale.
Okay, so Salem correspondent Chris Lehman, you're watching all this happen. You've got experience with how these things go. What happens next, do you think?
Nobody really knows at the moment. There's an extraordinary number of television crews here at the Capitol. They're not here to cover the legislature. They're staked out outside of the governor's office and on the grounds of the Capitol doing live shots. And we don't know. The governor has no public appearances scheduled. He could literally release a statement at any moment, but there's nothing to compel him to leave except his own conscience at this point. He is the governor and remains the governor as long as he wants to, at least for the time being.
And we wait. Unprecedented. Chris Lehman, Salem correspondent, thank you.
You're welcome.
On the Week in Review, yes, Joni?
Well, I'm looking at the front page of the Oregonian, and there are 13, count them, 13 stories about Kitzhaber. And it's just, it's almost like you're waiting for the shoe to drop Friday afternoon, you know, everybody's favorite time for these things.
I don't know. Yes. He could pull a Rob Ford.
But he could pull.
He could just stay there for months partying.
Right. Right. I mean, do we know, could this just be nothing? Yeah, he's under investigation. He's got no intent. When he talks publicly, well, that's absurd. I have no intention to resign. Could this be nothing?
The problem is it gets worse every time he talks publicly. The attorney general in the state is undertaking a criminal investigation of and there's this the relationship that he has with the First Lady is odd because they're not married. They consider her First Lady, yet they live together, yet the governor has said she's not part of his household.
For tax purposes.
She apparently has not been paying tax on some of this income that she's been receiving.
Why should she pay tax? Come on.
And the governor says, well, I don't have anything to do with her taxes, but he's not going to compel her to talk.
Talk about pressure on your relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be a tough Valentine's Day.
Really?
I think we can all agree on that. I mean, in 1 year, I think she made, you know, $80,000 from one of these companies that she was consulting for, and another year, I think $30,000. And I know in one of those years, she listed her income as $20,000. Like, I mean, there's no universe in which she was confused about her income. I mean, she was just, it appears, straight up lying on her taxes, which is also not good.
Well, part of this undercuts Kitzhaber's sort of clean gene reputation as somebody who's willing to sort of speak the truth about politics. Democrat. He's been critical of Democrats and Republicans. So he has a kind of nonpartisan varnish. But the political calculations about his resignation are interesting because he's most likely going to face a recall election. Oregon was one of the very first states to have recall, and they're probably going to use it. And the Democrats, the leadership is now urging Kitzhaber to resign, because that way they could get a Democratic governor in the Secretary of State. And they're afraid of losing the governorship.
Well, that's what's so interesting, because Kitzhaber was just reelected in November, and the Democrats would have none of the woes that were surrounding him. They didn't want to hear a peep about it. Now, that exactly what Skip said, now that they could get one of their own in there, they want to talk about all the things they didn't like about him anyway, like that horrible healthcare website that Oregon botched just about as well as any state could.
It's so interesting to me that there doesn't seem to be any evidence, other than kind of maybe covering things up, that Kitzhaber really let this affect his governing of the state.
Right.
It's more like he has lady problems.
That's what I'm saying.
That's the nutty part of the story.
Yeah. I mean, is he choosing between standing by his woman and being a governor of a state?
Listen, those types of problems led the former governor of Virginia into prison. I mean, he's facing the beach house. He's facing jail time.
Didn't he use the money to buy a beach house, I believe, some of it? Probably for his lady.
And right. And he actually, in court, in his defense, tried to put as much blame as possible on his wife.
He's going to need a little candy heart that says, "Be mine."
Kitzhaber is definitely not doing that. But at some point, when you have an attorney general's investigation, things are going to be sorted out.
Sorted or sorted?
sorted out.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. You know, a lot of this is not the governor. It's not what he did wrong. It's what this person standing next to him see Greek mythology
right.
for like a couple dozen parables about, you know, how this gets you into trouble. But that was the distinction that was made in the election. It was that he hadn't done X, Y, and Z, but it was this little dust storm next to him.
Okay, we need to post some Greek mythology at our Facebook page, KUOW Public Radio. We'll get to that as never. We're live tweeting right now at KUOW. KUOW's Week in Review, and let's get right back at the next top story in just a moment. Do not go away. Not tune away from KOW's Week in Review or you'll miss your last 5 seconds.
Earthquake. Moderate shaking expected in 5 seconds.
You'll want to stay tuned. Joni Balter, Luke Burbank, Knut Berger, and you with the Week in Review. So quakes later, but we don't have a lot of other big weather disasters here, you know, like natural disasters. But quakes come without warning. What could we possibly do? Stay tuned for that. Let's talk about how naturally pleasant we are right now. It's like 60 degrees going to be today, mostly sunny weekend. It's going to cool off a little to only 53 degrees this weekend in February. No good snow at Snoqualmie. Tubing areas closed. Good news, bad news, or no news?
I don't personally love it because it's February and it's April and February is what I'm trying to say here. And I don't know, what are we going to do in March and April for trees, for beautiful flowering trees? They're all popping right now.
I'm talking tulips I've seen bent. You know how they're bent over from the weight of the big yellow flower in, you know, April? But that's now. Good news, bad news, or no news?
Well, I think it's bad news. And I don't think this particular weather stretch is due to global warming. At least Cliff Mass doesn't think so. So I don't think
we're always telling people.
Never speak of him on this station.
I was going to say, do you have authorization?
I had him on this show a couple months ago. But you're right. We're always telling people if it's a cold winter, that doesn't mean there's not global warming. Right. So don't pay attention to any one moment.
Right. Exactly. But here's the but. This is very much like the weather we're predicted to have, our winter weather in the year by the year 2040. So just down the road, the idea is that we'll have milder winters, a lot of rain, very little snow, really shrunken snowpacks. I drove over Snoqualmie Pass yesterday, and it was just unbelievable. I mean, even the not just the ski slopes had big grass growing, and yep. You couldn't even sled. But up on the mountaintops around her, practically, they look like it looks like late spring.
Mm-hmm. Listen,
really amazing.
I'm not a student of history or the future. I'm shaky on
You're
the
stuck
present.
Stuck in the present.
So that probably impacts this, but I'm loving it.
Yeah,
I mean, there's probably a lot of.
He's got his flip flops.
There are a lot of, you know, sort of climate related implications and things that we will rue years from now. But the fact that it's not bitterly cold outside yep. is, I mean, here's another bit of heresy in the Northwest. When I lived in Los Angeles, I was worried when I moved down there that I would miss the seasons and Christmas without the snow. It took me about 7 hours to get over that. And at which point I realized. It is awesome.
I am
78 degrees most of the time.
It's March, and I'm walking down the shirt in my short sleeves. This should be a birthright. I lived in L.A. too.
It's pleasant for it to be less cold. Again, maybe there's a snowpack implication, et cetera, but I don't understand this bizarre fealty to being uncomfortable, because that's how it's been most of your life.
But some of us feel more comfortable with the other weather. To me, if it's 50 degrees and 80% plus humidity, I'm uncomfortable.
Right. You have a polar fleece beard, though. Which
exactly.
I've almost
That's
never seen on
the,
a human.
I've got, like the, I've got the hair. I've got the beard. I've got the Filson gear. I am equipped for 37 degrees and raining. And that's what I feel comfortable. So I feel like one of those red cedars that looks limp and miserable.
And you look like one
while there's
while
a palm tree right next to it that's flourishing.
Wearing sunglasses, drinking a Corona.
Exactly.
Yeah, but you know, how do you then explain Boston? You know, so we've got the warm and they've got more snow than they've ever seen. So.
All right, well, we're going to move on. But I feel sorry for someone whose entire winter life revolves around skiing, yet they can't be bothered to go to Mount Baker. It's all, you know, oh, God, poor me. Oh, no, I'm not going to drive that far if I can't go to snowfall.
If I can't do it in under 30 minutes.
There you go. Okay, so top stories. Apparently the weather is a top story because we're all vibrating about it. But let's talk the latest on vaccinations here. We have told you there's been a national measles outbreak, started at Disneyland, 4 sick people here in Washington. Washington state legislators are thinking about making it so if parents don't vaccinate their kids for personal reasons, non-medical, non-religious reasons, then the kids can't go to public school. This week, we got a warning about backlash from legal crackdowns on non-vaccinators. NPR talked to an Emory University epidemiologist, Saad Omer.
My concern is that we will have, after the current fear of this outbreak goes down, then we'll have a backlash in a few years. The public perception of these issues changes drastically. So I think our laws work. They work as nudges. They don't work as shoves.
Nudges, not shoves. So are we overdoing our response to non-vaccinators? I talked very briefly to the sponsor of this Washington state bill, State Representative June Robinson of Everett. Representative Robinson, some researchers are saying don't get rid of the personal exemption. Just make it harder to get. Make parents get professional counseling. They have to write a letter. They have to get the letter notarized. They have to reapply so that you're not telling them no. You're saying, yes, we respect your right to not vaccinate. You're the parent, but too bad about all this red tape. What do you think?
Well, yes, thank you for bringing that up. I have read that research, and I also see that the states that have the highest immunization rates have the fewest exemptions. That's what I want to do, is keep our kids safe, keep our communities healthy, and have more kids get their immunizations.
Well, the worry is that cutting out exemptions may be working now, but that when you say or imply that non-vaccinators are wrong and or backward and or gullible, that they tend to get more determined, less open to persuasion.
I believe that parents want to do the right thing for their kids and their communities, and I want to support parents in doing that. You know, we have clearly proven that vaccines are safe. I'm confident that going forward, the conversation will change.
Okay, so State Representative June Robinson says she's confident.
I'm confident people will no longer be crazy in the future.
Well, Luke, you and I talk about this, I feel like, a lot, which is the idea that you want people to react one way, and then the human brain actually works in a way that might be the opposite of what you want.
Think about this. There were non-vaxxers years and years ago, and that was before the internet existed. Mm-hmm. If anything, the internet is giving, I think, rise to, I mean, what we see this year, I believe it's what the highest number of measles in some long amount of time. And don't think that's not growing out of a lot of people on the internet getting questionable information or watching Jenny McCarthy on an old piece of Larry King Live tape.
Yep.
So no, it's not going to get better in the future.
Parentheses, Google is launching this health query service to try to give you, because they'd say it's that important that you can crazy Google a lot of things, but we want you to get better health results in your search. So yeah, that definitely, we had interviews this week on KOW about how that thing is happening.
This outbreak of measles is a warning to folks. You know, what is going on with this crisis, if that's the right word for it, is it's a confluence of folks on the very far left who do not like drug companies and folks on the right who do not like government. And together they are producing some numbers that are making legislators quiver about what is safe. So, you know, you have like Vashon Island on one hand and Ferry County showing up as the big numbers here. We're talking about public health, public safety. It's a reasonable bill in the legislature to consider if that would work. One concern is it would be like as soon as you get rid of the personal exemption, it'll be like medical marijuana. Then everyone has a medical exemption, right?
Anything more, Knut? Or shall we move on?
We should move on, I guess. But I'm in the nudge, not shove.
Why?
Category. Well, for the very reasons that...
This is the same guy who wants it to be winter all year round. just point out for the record.
I do take it.
And I think the public health people are going to have to just get a lot more creative and maybe internet savvy about leading people to water or leading them to vaccinations. It isn't just, if we present the scientific material, they'll suddenly convert. I think you have to be probably sneakier and more stealthy than that, or put out information about how vaccines will help you after the apocalypse. Or,
right.
You know? Whatever. No bunker should be without, you know.
With 5 seconds to go till the earthquake, right?
Yeah, we'll get to that.
I mean, I understand why parents don't like the feeling of the government telling them what they can and can't do with their children. It seems like you have the right, I guess, to not vaccinate your child. And we have the right to say you have to live in the middle of the woods with no one else around, like you're in some Bon Iver song. You just no humans can see you or your family until you get these shots. If you want to go out there and go Rousseau on it, cool.
Right.
But don't hang out on Capitol Hill with your measles and your smallpox or whatever you have.
Luke Burbank, Joni Balter, Knut Berger, and Bill Radke on the top stories of the week. We've got 10-ish minutes left, and so let's get to the next two stories. What are we going to do without Jon Stewart, and what are we going to do with only 5 seconds to live? Stay tuned. KUOW's Week in Review. The next top story, Jon Stewart says he will leave The Daily Show this year. How much does that matter?
Boohoo City over here, because I really enjoyed watching him. I loved how he made the news approachable for some folks. You know, one of the arguments for comedy is that you want, you want your citizenry informed. That's good for democracy. He had a way of reaching people that some of the other newscasters did not.
Was he informing people, or was he just culling ridiculous Fox News clips
reacting? It was a healthy mix of every single thing that you can think
But you
of.
Feel he did inform?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Now, some folks thought he was too nihilistic. I did not.
Right. There's this criticism that to get a laugh, his stance, what he's telling all these young people who get their news from him is, it's all so ridiculous.
Yeah, but that was written in Slate. And here's a classic Slate headline, why cancer is good for you.
Right.
Exactly.
Why lying in the snow will warm you up. That's right. All Slate exists to do.
Against peace of mind.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think I was more sort of theoretically bummed out by this. When I saw that, I also have been a real big fan of Jon Stewart's over the years. And I was thinking, oh, man, he's not going to be doing The Daily Show anymore. And then I realized I don't really watch The Daily Show that much. I see a clip of Jon Stewart when it pops up in the stream of Facebook information.
Yep.
That's about how I consume the show at this point. And I think he did a really great job and really created an entirely new kind of entertainment, journalism, whatever you want to call it. But it's sort of had, you know, been on the vine long enough.
You have a good point. If it's all about how young people get their news from Jon Stewart, young people are watching videos, if anything, not, you know, even I've cut my cable and I'm kind of young.
You are wearing a hoodie.
You were once young.
Canute.
Well, I will absolutely miss Jon Stewart in his current incarnation. And like Luke, I don't have cable, but I watch clips.
Because
of
you're
Stewart.
Youthful.
Because I loathe it. But
you get some reception through your beard. That's the last beard joke.
Wait a minute, I had a 50 Shades of Grey reference.
Yeah, right. But I never viewed Jon Stewart as a news source, although other people have. I viewed him as a media critic. I view Jon Stewart as like one of the most astute and critic, particularly of cable television, of Fox and CNN. His takedowns, the way they would mine broadcasts as to how stuff was spun over time and who... It was just brilliant stuff. And, you know, it's like, well, we pay Jon Stewart to do that, so we don't have to watch it.
Well, he has a team of producers who do that. So my question is, no Jon Stewart, no Stephen Colbert, the character. John Oliver's good, but he's on HBO. Is a golden age of TV satire gone, or does it just change hosts it's all about computer videos anyway? Like, what have we missed in the last year?
Well, I don't think we know if the golden age is gone. It depends on who comes in. For me personally, and I say this as a person who attended Saturday school as a little Jewish kid, Jon Stewart was the sweet spot between sort of Jewish humor, news, comedy. And that's going to be hard to replace just for that little combination. And I know that's maybe not a universal, but I'm just saying it like I feel it.
There's also something to the consistency of that show being on, you know, five nights a week. And I'm getting close to old man yells at cloud territory. But when I see stuff on Vine, when I see stuff that pops up as these little one-off, almost ephemeral moments of media criticism, I see them, they go through my mind. There isn't this consistent voice of, here is a person you check in with five nights a week.
That's a good call.
At the time when I was watching a lot of The Daily Show.
Yep.
So I don't know if it will be replaced by all the other stuff that's out there. I mean, again, for younger people, they may find that other stuff actually more informative, more enriching. But for somebody my speed, I do like that consistency.
Yeah, it's hard for me to imagine The Daily Show without Jon Stewart. So when they were saying he was leaving the show, I was thinking, well, doesn't that just mean the end of the show?
Right.
And maybe not. But
did you see what happened to Viacom's stock price the next day?
No.
Lost $350 million of value. Went down 1.5% on the news that he was leaving.
What about politics? Because we keep hearing he's so influential, he was mocking conservatives. Stephen Colbert was mocking conservatives. They're both gone. How much does that hurt Hillary Clinton, et cetera?
Well, I just wonder how much it hurts our watching of the 2016 elections. I mean, there was some fun stuff in there.
It's probably good for Hillary.
Good for Hillary?
Yeah, she won't be mocked.
Right.
I mean, you know, John Stewart.
You don't watch Fox
John
News,
Stewart
do you?
she'll be mocked. But you know what I mean? When John Stewart would get on Obama, you know, that would get a lot of attention because it was like liberal takes after. You know, believe me, there are a lot of Democrats who love to roast Hillary.
Yeah.
But that was even
probably a net plus.
I mean, that was something that was mentioned this week as part of why Jon Stewart probably departed. You know, also Comedy Central's overall ratings as a network were down 17% last year. Mm. And one of the things pointed out was that you don't have a George W. Bush. You don't have a, you know, Herm Cain. You don't have these really over the top characters. I mean, how much can you say about John Boehner's skin tone?
Right.
A lot, if you're me.
Clearly.
But
it's orange, by the way.
It's not the normal
comical
color.
Yeah.
But so they didn't have, you know, he didn't have those same people to go after, which might have hurt him a little bit.
Well, you had to wonder also when Stephen Colbert got his new job, just exactly how was Jon Stewart feeling and what was next for him? I wondered that the whole time.
That's the next question, right? What's next for Jon Stewart? Okay, this is KOW's Week in Review, and what's next? Do I have to play the horn again? Can I just tell people to stay tuned?
Oh, you're dying to play that horn.
No, I can resist it.
Let's see it.
Right back with the horn. Stay tuned. KUOW's Week in Review. I'm Bill Radke. As I was saying, we don't have hurricanes here. you rarely see a tornado, killer heat wave, deep freeze, but we have an earthquake fault, and unlike hurricanes and deep freezes, earthquakes come without warning. Until now, the Pacific Northwest Seismic Network at the UW is out with an earthquake early warning system. Well, sort of early.
This is a test. Earthquake. Earthquake. Moderate shaking expected in 5 seconds.
And you're shaking. 5 second warning. Luke, what do you think?
Make peace with your maker. What are you supposed to do in the five? I mean,
heal relationships.
I think it's, yeah. I mean, certainly the more heads up one can get, the better. But I almost think I would just start turning around in a circle. I mean, it would overload all of my circuits. Like, it's not enough time to really do anything.
Yeah, and by the way, while you're having to make the most important decision of your life, and what you need is just a moment just to concentrate.
That really.
Yeah, thanks. So now it's not always going to be 5 seconds. That sometimes, to not get all into seismicness, but sometimes you can get fairly long-ish warnings.
I mean, like 10?
Could be 10 seconds. Yeah. But the idea is that they will eventually hardwire these kind of alerts into bullet trains. They will coast to a stop, into elevators, into manufacturing.
Right. I mean, there are ways in which there could be an advantage. You could shut down a highway. You could, yep. Yeah, like stop a train before it goes across a bridge or that kind of thing. I think they can maybe even get it out to 30 seconds or more, and who knows technologically.
It could be 3 or 4 minutes in Seattle and Portland, because the early waves come soon and then the big stuff comes later.
If you're in the middle of surgery, that's not a bad thing.
Right, middle of surgery, exactly.
Right. And even on the shorter thing, if you can keep your head without being completely panicked.
Can you keep your head?
Yeah. No. No, but if you can keep your head, you know, you might be able to get under a piece of furniture or get to a wall or a doorway or something.
Write your will.
Know, very quickly.
I was in this building, in this very radio station, when the Nisqually quake happened,
uh-huh.
I hid underneath the printer in the newsroom. And my thought was,
and you live to tell about
it. I can't believe this is really happening.
Yes.
And I don't know if 5 more seconds would have changed that experience.
5 more seconds would make the Week in Review even better, but we don't have it. Luke Burbang, host of the TBTL podcast and Public Radio's Live Wire. Good to see you, Luke.
Thanks for having me.
Joni Balter, Civic Cocktail on the Seattle Channel. She contributes to Bloomberg View. Hey, Joni.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Fun to
Knute
be here.
Berger, always. Mossback at crosscut.com, a columnist at Seattle Magazine.
Thanks,
Knute.
Thank you, Bill.
And we are on the Twitters at KUOW or on Facebook, KUOW's Facebook page. And this show is produced by Jason Pagano. You can get a podcast of us. You can go to iTunes. You can go to Stitcher. You can go to the one-stop shop, KUOW.org. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you again next week.